White Sox have already had themselves a successful little weekend, having secured the series win in Detroit with a second straight win at Comerica Park yesterday afternoon. Today, they will go for a sweep of the Detroit Tigers with Sean Burke, who has been their unquestioned ace over the last 2 months. They'll go for a sweep of the second place Detroit Tigers. It was yet again another virtually perfect day for the White Sox when you consider what went on at Comerica Park, the 4-3 win for the White Sox. Of course, you had a, it wasn't a near perfect because the Twins lost to the Phillies 9-1 after they were idle on Friday. They competed in the Field of Dreams game, which they also lost on Thursday. Thus, that's why they had the day off on Friday, because they were traveling back from Iowa. And then the Guardians did win yesterday, but they have fallen after the White Sox took their series from them last weekend at Wrigley Field. The Guardians have now fallen to five back. So right now, the White Sox are on Sunday, August, it's the 16th, right? Yesterday was the 15th. Always got the baseball season. Look, we're in the dog days. Not going to lie, I always glance at the calendar, but sometimes early in the morning, 10 a.m., may not have glanced at the date just yet, and that was the case this morning. But it is August 16th, and the White Sox are a season-high 4.5 games up on their nearest competitor in the American League Central. That is the Detroit Tigers. Today, who are in second place as we speak, but again, the Twins and Guardians both 5 games back. And maybe most importantly, the White Sox are 5 in front of the Tigers and 6 in front of the Twins and Guardians in the loss column. So White Sox 64-58 right now with their ace on the mound as they go for a sweep. And oh, Sox fans, I know you know, there's a pretty big little series coming up after the White Sox wrap up their series in Comerica Park today, starting tomorrow, when the White Sox will return to Chicago to play 3 road games. The one time during the season when the White Sox will sleep in their own beds but still be the road team, and that will be the case at Wrigley Field on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of this week. So lots to get after today. 312-332-3776. That's the number if you want to jump aboard and talk about your first place Chicago White Sox with me. If you're not necessarily familiar with the show, because we are on Sunday today, usually White Sox Weekly, we run during on Saturdays, 2 hours prior to our pregame show beginning. I always like to say it is just an extended version of pregame coverage. We're talking White Sox baseball. We're recapping what happened throughout the week. We're going around Major League Baseball and getting you caught up on what happened there as well. But because it is Sunday and we are generally on Saturdays, you're always welcome to call us and join us on White Sox Weekly. Again, 2 hours usually on Saturdays. There will be one other Sunday White Sox Weekly coming your way in 2 weeks when there is another Bears game. That's the reason for the shift in the schedule, because, of course, the Bears had their first preseason game yesterday, which kind of conflicted with the White Sox game. So we are on White Sox Weekly Sunday this week, and then Sunday in a couple of weeks when there's another Bears game on a Saturday. So that is getting you caught up with where we're at right now. And let's get you caught up with what happened yesterday in case you missed it, in case you were consumed by the Bears coverage, or maybe just maybe because you want to relive and relish in the glory that was another victory by the White Sox. Things started out early with Braden Montgomery coming through again in the cleanup spot for the White Sox with another RBI after a 3-RBI night on Friday.
2-2. Grounded toward right, base hit. Antonacci's going to score, and Braden Montgomery does it again. It's 1-0.
That gave the White Sox the early lead. However, the Tigers would come right back and tie it up in the bottom of the first. We move to the top of the third, and Colson Montgomery has certainly been in a bit of a funk as of late, has struggled quite a bit. Well, he was at the plate with two outs and a couple runners aboard in a tie-tie ball game, and it certainly felt like it was a much-needed breakthrough for Colson Montgomery.
Swinging a ground ball fair into the corner and right. Two are going to score. Benintendi and Montgomery. Colson to second. He's got a double. 3-1.
The Tigers, though, pesky as they are, kept chipping away. They scored a run in the fourth. They picked up a run in the fifth to tie it up yet again. So the White Sox had to do more work. I should note that yesterday the White Sox got a solid start from Anthony Kay. I think that's kind of what Anthony Kay has shown this year. He's a solid starter. He may not necessarily be somebody who's going to be a front of the rotation type guy, but Anthony Kay has been a dependable veteran. He has logged 121 innings so far this season. He's picked up 9 wins. He's got an ERA of 4.01. And that's kind of what yesterday was. Another 5 1/3 from Anthony Kay. 3 earned runs, 1 walk, 4 strikeouts, allowed 1 home run. But, basically gave the White Sox a nice start to keep them in the ball game, especially when you consider on Friday, even though the White Sox won that game handily, they were in a odd position, or I guess a normal position in baseball, but in a spot where they used Sean Newcomb as their opener on Friday. Jose Urquidy was recalled from AAA and made his his White Sox debut on Friday as the bulk man. And so it certainly was a spot where you were hoping Anthony Kay could give the White Sox some length. And that's exactly what he did. 5 1/3. And then afterwards, the bullpen, which we will get to shortly, was even better than that, as they have generally been all season long. But with the White Sox tied up at 3 apiece in the seventh, enter Andrew Benintendi. The vet has been one of the most dependable hitters in situations when the White Sox have runners in scoring position, and yesterday was no different.
A 1-1. Benintendi, it's a ground ball. That's off the glove of a diving McGonagall. It'll get into left. Grichik scores. Vargas to third. Andrew Benintendi continues to be big in these spots. It's 4-3.
No doubt about that. And Andrew Benintendi put the White Sox in the lead in the top of the seventh inning. Now, Jordan Hicks relieved Anthony Kay in the sixth inning, and he put down the two hitters that he faced there. And then in the seventh inning, in the bottom of the seventh, after the White Sox had taken the lead, Jordan Hicks, again, another scoreless inning of work on the day. Jordan Hicks, an inning and 2/3, 3 strikeouts, has now lowered his ERA to 3.19. My, oh my, how far we've come with Jordan Hicks. I'm looking at you, Aiden O'Connor. Aiden in for Brendan Riley this weekend, producing as the executive producer of White Sox Baseball. I give Aiden some guff because earlier in the year, he was a little disappointed and disgruntled with Jordan Hicks, as I know a lot of White Sox fans were. But you cannot argue with me anymore. It is undeniable. Jordan Hicks, since he has returned from the injured list, has been the second most reliable reliever in the White Sox bullpen. I won't make him the first. I digress. I understand. Obviously, Grant Taylor is the most trusted arm in the White Sox bullpen. That was the case yet again yesterday, as he came in after Jordan Hicks and gave the White Sox a scoreless eighth inning. He struck out one, gave up one hit. And, I mean, listen, Jordan Hicks, again, another feather in the cap of the White Sox pitching organization, fronted, of course, by Brian Bannister. And what they've been able to do, they've unlocked that talent, that triple-digit arm that has been in this league now as a longtime veteran. And, I mean, listen, a lot of people looked at the acquisition of Jordan Hicks in the David Sandlin deal, and most people said, okay, the White Sox are buying a prospect. They're taking on the Jordan Hicks contract so that they can add David Sandlin to the organization. And it is not the case at all. Jordan Hicks has been, in some ways, a linchpin in that bullpen, because without him, you wonder where they might be. Because you take one trusted, arm out of a pen, and all of a sudden the dominoes start to fall. You start to see overuse. He has really been a huge revelation this year. He picked up the win yesterday. I mentioned Grant Taylor came in after him and was scoreless. And then Brian Hudson on in the ninth for the save, and he was up to the task as he has been numerous times this year. In fact, his fifth save of the season yesterday.
Nobody is left. This place is still packed. Torkelson in the air, center field, not deep. Doyle is there. He's got it. And the White Sox have taken the first two games in this series, and they've got a chance to sweep tomorrow.
Tomorrow, of course, being today. How about Brenton Doyle, Tyson Bagent's favorite White Sox, recording the final outs of the game yesterday. 4-3 win for the White Sox. Again, they now move to 64-58 on the season, dropping Detroit to 60-63. And again, can't be said enough right now. On August 16th, the White Sox are a season high, 4.5 games in front of their nearest competitor in the American League Central. And also, by the way, the White Sox currently sit in the number 2 seed in the American League, which of course means that they would, if they can hold on to that spot, receive a bye in the first round of the playoffs. I'm certainly getting ahead of myself. I get that. But I also think it's worth noting that while we're doing a lot of scoreboard watching about the American League Central teams, I think we also need to start adding the Houston Astros, and we'll throw the Texas Rangers in the mix. But it's also going to be, I think, paramount for the White Sox to maintain that number 2 spot, because this is something that I think maybe doesn't get talked about quite enough. Having the first or second seed in the playoffs, I do think is a huge advantage that is under discussed, because it's not just that you have the automatic berth to the next round, the LDS, but it's also the fact that your opponent has to play a 3-game series prior to the 5-game LDS that awaits them, and theoretically is going to be taxing their pitching, probably using their top 2 starters if they have their druthers. There's always the possibility that a team playing in the wild card has to utilize those pitchers on the very last weekend of the season to ensure they get in to the playoffs. But you're setting yourself up for postseason success if you can secure that bye. And so the Houston Astros have been hot as of late, especially since they've gotten Josh Hader back into their bullpen. He's kind of helped them secure their struggles there. And they are now 63-61 on the season. So Astros are 3 games back in the loss column. They have 1 less win than the White Sox. So right now, the Houston Astros are 2 games back of the White Sox in the standings for that second seed, again, which would be a bye in the first round of the playoffs. 312-332-3776. Again, that's the number if you want to jump aboard and talk some White Sox with me, Jeff Meller. White Sox fans, get access to the best seats at the best value and lock in a 2027 ticket plan today. Be here for the biggest matchups opening day on April 1st and exciting new promotions. Plus, enjoy flexible payment plans, savings on single games, and more. To secure your ticket plan, visit whitesox.com/2027. Now, there was a historic major league debut yesterday in the city of Chicago. We will discuss that coming up next right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Instagram at ESPN_Chicago.
The pitch. He swings, and he hits it high, deep to center field. That's back. That's a goner. The first swing in the big leagues. How about that? Joshua Baez goes yard. All Pete Crow Armstrong could do was turn around and wave it goodbye to the bleachers. The 3-2 delivery, changeup, and that's hammered down the left field line towards the corner. He did it again. Are you kidding me? A 3-2 pitch, and he hammers it into the bleachers in left field. Baez has homered twice here today, and the Cardinals
take a 4-3 lead. Unbelievable.
The pitch. A swing, and there's a drive, and that's hit well to right field. That's deep to right. That ball is gone. That ball is gone. Unbelievable. 3 at-bats in the big leagues. 3 home runs for Joshua Baez. A 3-run lead for the Cardinals. He is homer to center, homer to left, homer to right. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my goodness, indeed. Highlights courtesy of KMOX yesterday at Wrigley Field. Cardinals top hitting prospect Joshua Baez made his big league debut. And of course, White Sox fans, you're very familiar with that voice, at least on the first and third home run calls. And that, of course, was John Rooney, who was the longtime voice of the White Sox for so many years, including the 2005 World Series championship. Now, of course, the play-by-play man for the St. Louis Cardinals. And I was amused watching that take place yesterday during the White Sox game. I was monitoring it. In fact, John Rooney was at Wright Field on Thursday. Of course, the Cardinals had the off day. They flew in Wednesday evening after their game because, of course, they're playing the Cubs at Wrigley Field this weekend. And so John Rooney, with the off day, stopped by Wrigley Field, said hello to a lot of folks, was in the broadcast booth with Len Casper, Darren Jackson, and myself for, I think, the first 3 or 4 innings of the game on Thursday against the Reds. And, of course, Len and DJ were taking care of the play-by-play. And I was chatting with John Rooney quite a bit during the first 3 innings. We're just talking baseball, reminiscing, and, of course, I was picking his brain about what he thought about the Cardinals. They've had a nice, I think, somewhat unexpected bounce back season in terms of what, especially when you compare where they were at. A lot of people looked at their season as potentially a rebuild, in some ways somewhat similar to what the White Sox have going on right now this season. And I was chatting quite a bit with John Rooney, and he was discussing Jordan Walker and, you know, how he's really figured things out this year. And if you're a baseball fan, you've probably known the name Jordan Walker for some time. Of course, he was a highly touted prospect for the Cardinals for many, many years. And Cardinals fans were frustrated because they felt like they didn't understand. They were constantly reworking his swing. Everybody knew Jordan Walker had big time power. But the question was, what was going on? Why couldn't they unlock it? And of course, finally this season, they did a lot of work again, and they finally, though, gotten things right with Jordan Walker. Of course, he was an all-star this year. He participated in the home run derby, won the home run derby. And, you know, he's got 23 home runs so far this season. He's got an 821 OPS, and he has accumulated 3.2 wins above replacement. So he's been a fixture in their lineup, and part of the reason why they have had a really solid year so far this year, and part of the reason why they are one game above 500 right now. But what I was amused by, as Joshua Baez was making history yesterday at Wrigley Field, was on Thursday, I had asked John about a couple of Cardinals players, and I said, so what's up with Joshua Baez? Because I don't know the exact number, but I think Baez might have had like 34 home runs in the minor leagues. Can you guys check that for me, what the number was before? He was crushing the ball in AAA for the Cardinals, and a lot of Cardinals fans were clamoring for him to be called up to the majors. And John Rooney told me specifically on Thursday, he said, he's close, but one thing they're not going to do is rush him the way they did with Jordan Walker. They want to make sure that he's ready for the big leagues. And I then said something along the lines of, yeah, I know he's been striking out quite a bit despite the big home run numbers. And he did have 34 in the minor leagues, and he was still striking out quite a bit. And so John Rooney said in our booth on Thursday to me, they just want to make sure that he is ready to go when he gets to the big leagues, so that they don't have a situation like they did with Jordan Walker. They want him to be ready. But he's close. And that was on Thursday. And then sure enough, we got the word on Friday that the Cardinals were promoting their top hitting prospect. And looks ready to me. home run on his on the first pitch that he saw, which, and oh, by the way, the home run that he hit on that first pitch, that home run went 449 feet, which is the longest distance by a player on the first pitch that they had seen in their career since tracking began back in 2008. So, I mean, listen, there's obviously a lot of qualifiers there. Not too many players have homered on the first pitch in their big league career. So, but nevertheless, Joshua Baez did. That was historic. And then go ahead and add a second and third home run in his first three at-bats. Nobody had ever done that before until yesterday. And I was also enjoying Chip Carey's call on television of that.
And here comes Baez as a big leaguer for the first time. Swing and a high fly, belted. First pitch in the show. Baez homers. Look at that Cardinal dugout. It is not supposed to be that easy. Unreal.
This is the energy. This is the excitement. This is the thump that the Cardinals have been waiting for. This is the future. We're getting a chance to see it here. What a swing of the bat. 449-foot shot. The first pitch he sees in the big leagues.
Swing and a drive down the line. Did he do it again? That ball is gone. He's got two homers. From 0-2 to a full count, and then the grand tour, 4-3 Cardinals.
What a moment. He didn't see fastballs in this one. It was nothing but off-speed. The home run was on the changeup, down 3-2. This dude is bringing some life to this offense.
Swing, drive, well hit right. Suzuki back. That is gone. It is gone. It is gone. Three homers for Baez. Major League history at Wrigley Field.
Maybe for the first time in my professional life, I am speechless.
Chip Carey on the television broadcast of Cardinals baseball yesterday, Joshua Baez's historic debut. No player in the history of baseball had ever homered in their first three at-bats until he did it yesterday at Wrigley Field at the Cubs' expense. 8-4 win for the Cardinals. Of course, the White Sox next opponents will be the Cubs at Wrigley Field Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of this week. One other note, Aiden O'Connor alerted me of this earlier this morning. So Stephen Carey, which is one of Chip's sons, posted this yesterday. He texted with Chip after the game. Stephen texted him, "Where does this game rank for you?" And Chip Carey's response to his son, "Number one, never been done before, ever." So, historic day at Wrigley Field yesterday. Joshua Baez, the Cardinals prospect, homers three straight times. 312-332-3776. Taking your calls. I got one caller on the line who wants to talk about the White Sox upcoming schedule. We'll do that. We'll also take a look back at some adversity that the White Sox have faced this week as they have lost Davis Martin to the injured list. We'll talk about that when we come back. Sox fans, head to the ballpark Friday, August 21st for Elvis Night presented by Beggar's Pizza. As the White Sox take on the Mets at 6:40, catch the White Sox in their iconic City Connect uniforms. Plus, stick around for a post-game fireworks show. To purchase tickets and prepaid parking, visit whitesox.com/promos. Jeff Meller here on White Sox Weekly. This is ESPN 1000.
Chicago app.
Take advantage of savings all summer long with our summer savings section. Score select lower level tickets starting at $20 on weekdays and $25 on weekends. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/section. Jeff Meller back here on White Sox Weekly as we get set for the series finale between the White Sox and Tigers coming your way with a 12:40 first pitch today. White Sox go for the sweep after they took the first two in Detroit. 312-332-3776. That's the number if you want to jump aboard and talk some White Sox with me before we get to our pregame coverage at noon today. That is the number that Jeff in Naperville dialed up. And Jeff, you meet the requirements. The only rule we have in White Sox Weekly is if you want to talk on the air, you have to, your name has to be Jeff. So what do you got going on today? See, I I thought we had him. Hey, Jeff, any luck? Check in on him. Hold on, guys. I don't know here. We might have an issue. Nevertheless, I digress. We'll see if we can clear that up. So I mentioned that the White Sox had a little bit of adversity earlier this week when Davis Martin was put on the injured list after he had an interesting issue with the blister and on his right hand. And that resulted in a bit of a dust up, if you will, against the Reds on Thursday afternoon. Davis Martin was tagged by Sal Stewart in the top of the first.
Burke and Castillo, and there's a deep fly ball to left, and that's a home run halfway up the stands just to the right of the White Sox bullpen, and Sal Stewart gives the Reds a 1-0 lead.
So Stewart homers in his first at bat for the Reds. That has been a problem for Davis Martin here recently, where he has allowed runs early on, and unfortunately, after a second home run in the first inning and the White Sox trailing 3-0, Sal Stewart came to the plate for his second at-bat of the game, and the first pitch that Martin threw at Sal Stewart, a little bit of chin music up and in, and Sal Stewart took none too kindly to the pitch by Martin that had him hit the dirt and bailing out of the way there. Now, tempers subsided. Davis Martin mouthed, "My bad, I'm sorry," almost immediately when Sal Stewart got up. So Sal Stewart, you know, said kind of just, "Okay, I get it. Accidental, you're saying you didn't mean to do it." Even though it didn't look great, obviously, because it's the first pitch after Sal Stewart just homered. But everyone's fine. No big deal. We move on. The next pitch, Davis Martin, remember, dealing with the blister issue.
The pitch, oh, he hit him. And Stewart is really upset. He points his bat at Davis, and the benches are clearing. The first pitch that was to the backstop, Stewart kind of looked at Davis and then acted like, okay, we're good. Now here come the relievers out of the bullpens. And that pitch hit him, I think, in the bill of the helmet, and Stewart didn't like it.
Yeah, and he, you know, immediately he went out there holding two fingers up. That's twice. And Davis Martin is the last guy in a White Sox uniform that's going to ever go head hunting.
Is Davis out? Well, just looking at a replay, and I think he's been kicked out. And Will Venable out now to chat with Alan Porter.
By all right, you'd think two up and in had to be on purpose from this guy. It's just not the case.
Venable has not been ejected. Martin has.
I agree with DJ's comments there. Len, I think later in the broadcast, shared the sentiment. Unfortunate coincidence that Martin was dealing with the blister and at that point had lost control. And then in the post-game press conference, we got Davis Martin's explanation for what happened.
Lost grip of the ball. The first one went over his head, made eye contact, said, "My bad, I have no intention of doing that." And then second one, we were trying to just drive a fastball down and away to kind of reset, which is a good reset for me, and then just lost it again. Blister on the finger, to say probably lost a little bit of a grip there, but yeah, just there's no intention there. Guys just came back, picked me up after the first inning. We're up 4-3, and that's obviously the last thing that I'm trying to do is try to start something there. Just wanted a quick inning, you know, shut down inning to get our offense back in there, and that was just unfortunate it happened.
And then Will Venable backed up Davis Martin as well.
Yeah, you know, guy hits a home run, then a pitch, his next bat that goes over his head, and then another one that hits his head. And I think the umpires felt like that there was intent there. You know, there wasn't. You know, even before that inning, we were treating Davis for a little bit of a finger blister there. So, you know, that's not how Davis plays. That's not how we play. And no intent. You know, number one, glad that Sal's okay. Was that scary when you get hit up around the head? And you understand the position that the umpires are in, but, you know, there's no intent.
So there you go. Will Venable understanding why he was ejected, but also trying to emphasize that that's not something that the White Sox do as a team. They're not going to be headhunting. It was just an unfortunate timing that it happened to occur after a player who had homered in his first at bat. And I would agree that Davis Martin is probably one of the last people, at least in terms of people I've interacted with, players I've interacted with, one of the last people on earth that I would expect to throw towards another hitter, especially up and in. So just unfortunate timing there. And of course, if you had any doubts, the White Sox placed Davis Martin on the injured list with that blister issue that he's dealing with. So he's going to be out for at least 15 days, retroactive to Friday's date, which of course is August 14th. So Davis Martin on the IL, which means the White Sox will have to kind of patch together their pitching, at least for that one rotation spot, over the next couple times through. I'll add that Davis Martin, if the White Sox want to have success going deep into the postseason, it feels like he could use a little time to, at the very least, maybe get himself, you know, reacclimated. He, at this point, has 125 innings pitched so far this year. That is just 17 shy of his career high total in the major leagues, which happened last year. And, oh, by the way, you know, where he's accumulated these 125 innings, you know, in a more constricted time frame than he did those 142 last year. So it's the biggest workload he's ever really had in the major leagues. So you can understand why, or at least I think it's fair to say or ask the question, is fatigue a factor in why Davis Martin has struggled a bit over the, you know, since the All-Star break, essentially, even prior to the All-Star break. So all fair questions. Hopefully an IL stint will let him refresh, get rested, and maybe, just maybe, come back off of it here in a couple of weeks and refine that form that had him in conversation as a possible All-Star in the first half of the season. Let's try Jeff in Naperville. Jeff, I think we got you this time. What's going on, my friend? You're on White Sox Weekly.
What's up, JM? This is JW, an avid listener calling in. Keep up the great work. You do a phenomenal job covering the Sox, my man.
Appreciate it, JW. What's going on?
So it's undoubtedly an exciting time for the Sox. Add this to the list. And, of course, history is not indicative, right, of future performance. But other than the one game against the Braves and this upcoming Cubs series, the remainder of our games are against teams in the Central we're on top of, or against other teams well under 500 or just above it. The Cardinals are a game over, Astros 3 over, and then the Mets 14 under, Royals 24 under, Rockies 26 under. I'll listen to what you have to think, but this has got to be an optimal schedule going forward.
I love it, JW. Good point. It's worth noting. It's also, you, first of all, I think what we can underline here partially is that when you look at some of the remaining opponents on the schedule here, some of the weaker teams, I think what you can emphasize here is, hey, the White Sox have gotten to this point right now where they're on top of the division with a record where they're six games above 500. They've done so getting through this, at least for the vast majority of the season, through the tougher portion of their schedule, at least when you look at what the records are right now, right? It can be, you know, when you say, okay, we get this, this is a series, you don't want them to take it easy. I don't think that'll be the case. Will Venable is not somebody who is going to really allow this team to get fat and happy. It's a day in and day out approach. They're consumed. The mantra is, what can they do to win today? And I think that has really served them well, Jeff. You're right, though. So for those who, you know, didn't necessarily catch everything that Jeff was laying out there, the rest of the way here for the White Sox, they, of course, have the crosstown series at Wrigley Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of this week. The Cubs are a good team. They play really good defensive baseball, and they themselves are in a really important stretch because I talked about the importance of trying to secure the bye with the top two seeds. The Cubs, it may be even more important for them because the National League, when you look at the teams that are likely to make it, it's going to be a gauntlet if you don't have a bye. Now, the Brewers, who it looked like were going to run away and hide with the National League Central, have struggled a little bit. And they've also been hit pretty hard by injuries as of late. Bryce Terang is, you know, one of their, probably their most important offensive player. He's dealing with a knee issue. He just had a second opinion, so they haven't placed him on the IL yet. But if they lose him, that could be a tough blow for them. They already have lost Brandon Woodruff from their starting rotation. Listen, they're a really good team, but they're dealing with some issues. So the Cubs are in a spot where they've been playing better as of late, and they're now four games back. So they've actually gotten back into that race, and it's huge because the Brewers right now have the number one seed in the NL. The Dodgers have the number two seed. The Braves right now are sitting with the number three seed as they lead the National League East, and the Cubs are in that first wild card spot, which means that the Cubs, if they, assuming they make it in the first round, would have to play the Phillies, and then theoretically, if they could get through that first round, would have the Brewers waiting for them in a potential second round matchup, and then if you got through that somehow, you'd have maybe the Dodgers or Braves waiting for you in the LCS. So you can see why it is, you know, if you can avoid that one round, it would be huge. And then to have home field and potentially have to avoid playing the Brewers and Dodgers, that's huge for them. So that's what they have. That's why this series is going to be critical for the Cubs. But after that, the White Sox have the one gamer, the makeup against the Braves, on Thursday this week at Wrigley Field. And then they will have the three with the Mets this upcoming weekend. And then the Rangers come to town for three. Now, this is where I get, you're right, Jeff. When I get back to, you know, hey, it looks easier on paper, but the Mets, after the trade deadline, have actually come back to life a little bit, and they've been playing better baseball. In fact, as I kind of quickly do the math here, they have won 10 of their last 13 games, the Mets, that is. So even though that's a team that's, you know, for the most part felt dead and buried all the year, they're playing better. So a lot of the baseball schedule sometimes just it happens to coincide with when do you align with the team and what kind of baseball are they playing. For instance, the two times that the White Sox matched up with the Red Sox, I mean, come on. The Sox got their doors blown off. And I say the Sox. The White Sox got their doors blown off by the Red Sox. And I don't think the Red Sox are by any means like a team the White Sox can't handle. I just think it was unfortunate timing for the White Sox to run into the Red Sox when they were unbeatable for a stretch run there. Now, you know, recently the Red Sox have struggled a little bit. I mean, in fact, over they have lost, as I look through the Red Sox schedule, they've actually lost six of their last eight games after going on that ridiculous run where they weren't losing to anybody. So, yes, you're right. If anything, Jeff, I'll go back to the biggest thing for the White Sox is maybe the way they close out the season, that final week of the year, with three against the Royals and then three at Wrigley Field against the Rockies. Those two teams to finish out the season, those final six games, that I think could play really well in the White Sox favor, because when you get to the final week and you've got two teams that are out of the playoff race, you don't even know necessarily what kind of pitchers they're going to be throwing at you, what kind of young players are going to be in the mix. So that's the benefit of playing a team that's not in a playoff race in September is, hey, and oh, you know what lines up well to the Pirates? The Pirates have gone sideways since the trade deadline, so that could be a very helpful series. But prior to that, I will say that I just mentioned it, that Houston Astros series could go a long way in determining who ends up having the number two seed if the White Sox can hold on to their current spot. Appreciate the call, Jeff. Thanks for making it. It was fun to kind of run through the White Sox schedule. 312-332-3776 if you want to talk some White Sox with me. It is Sunday, which means we always bring you our Sunday spotlight. Today, because we're on Sunday here with White Sox Weekly, I'm going to give you a little bit of a sneak peek as Len Casper has a conversation with Terry Francona coming your way during the pregame show. And I'm going to give you a little bit of a sneak peek of what you can look forward to, because the Reds skipper had the Cincinnati team, which, of course, the White Sox just had the dust up with. So we'll give you a sneak peek of that when we come back. This is the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox.
Cap and Jay Hood, weekday morning, 6 to 9, ESPN Chicago.
You talk a lot about your mentors, but Terry Francona across the diamond, what has he meant to the game? And you know, have you had any interaction with Terry over the years?
Yeah, I have. You know, one, my dad played with him. So, you know, as I was a player and came across Tito, you know, he would always give me love and, you know, give me a story or two about my dad and his time with my dad. And then my last spring training as a player was with the Indians at that time, and he was amazing. And there was a couple times in which I interviewed for jobs over there, and he was part of the interview process, so got to know a little bit more about his process, how he looks at things. And yeah, he's as good as it gets. He's been unbelievable to me, so I'm a big fan.
Will Venable, White Sox manager, earlier this week when the White Sox were playing the Reds, Terry Francona, the subject of this week's Sunday Spotlight, which we're about to give you a sneak peek of here in a moment. Jeff Meller back here on White Sox Weekly. Sox fans, join us at the ballpark for City Connect Fridays. Catch the team in the iconic uniforms every Friday night and shop the full collection at the team store. For more info, visit whitesox.com/city. I mentioned Len Casper chatting with Terry Francona. A quick sneak peek of some of that interview coming your way here. Len started by asking Terry Francona about what some Sox fans or some baseball fans may not be completely aware of, the fact that Terry Francona got his start inside the White Sox organization.
When I came to Cincinnati as a player, Buddy Bell, we roomed together. And then Buddy, when he got done, took over the White Sox minor leagues. He asked me if I wanted to start. I started coaching. I was a hitting instructor in Gulf Coast League, which was good because I had no idea what I was doing, but I got to learn and watch. And then the next year, I went to South Bend and started managing. And it was the best decision I ever made. One, the White Sox organization was as good as you can find. There were guys, people like Dewey Robinson and even Jerry Reinsdorf still here. I saw Jerry yesterday. I hate when people criticize him because anybody that's ever worked for him, you'll never hear somebody criticize him. And so that's the person I know. And the rest of the organization kind of fed off of that.
I'm thinking of some players I looked up today. James Baldwin was a young pitcher for you. Mike Cameron, Ray Durham. Any other names stand out of guys who later became really good big leaguers?
See, we had Cam was there. And
Greg Norton.
Yes. Scott Ruffcorn was a big number one pick. Yeah, we were pretty fortunate. We had some Luis Andujar. We had some good names, some good arms. It was fun. I went to Birmingham then after that. And again, Ron Schuler was the GM and Larry Monroe was here. It was just pretty family, you know, everybody's pretty close.
I know you've never been asked about the most famous player you ever managed, really at any level, probably in the big leagues as well, because he's the greatest basketball player ever. Is there a Michael story you haven't told publicly?
No, I don't think so. That's funny because I was teasing Jerry yesterday. And he was talking about Michael, and I said, hey, man, I said, I think you still owe me. I said, I pushed him back into basketball, and he was laughing. You know, I didn't know it at the time, because you're just trying to survive. But I was placed in the best learning experience you could ever be put in. You're dealing with arguably the most notable athletic figure in the world. You're dealing with media that, you know, when you're in Double A, you're just happy you're on radio. And then all of a sudden you're dealing with TV and trying to organize your time. So I was learning. And like I said, I didn't even realize it. But when I look back, it was the best experience you could ever have.
No question. Times have changed. It's not better or worse. It's different. The path to becoming a manager now really is multifold. Back then, though, you kind of had to go through the minor leagues. So the question for you is, at what point when you were at Birmingham, say, did you say to yourself, I'm ready to be a big league manager? Or did that ever happen before you got to Philly?
No, it really didn't. You're right. The way you said it is correct. The paths are different. And I would not have been able to do that. I was able to go manage in the minor leagues where you can make your mistakes. It's not on SportsCenter. You can learn how you feel, how you want to treat the players and talk to the players. I didn't even think about it. You know, when Buddy left and became the manager of the Tigers, I went with him as a third base coach. And I was driving home back to Arizona when the season was over, and Randy Smith, who was the general manager, called me, and I actually thought I was getting fired because we had lost, I think, 111 games. And he said to me, Tito, who do you know in Philadelphia? I said, I don't think anybody. And he goes, well, they want to interview you. So I called Buddy, and Buddy said, go do it. He goes, it'll be really good for you. You know, you won't get it. He goes, but it's good to start that process. Shoot, about 10 days later, I was a manager. And I'm like, and you talk about learning on the run, because I was not expecting that.
Last question, and I know it's hard to pick one thing. What's the best part about being a manager?
It can be the best and the worst. It's the ninth inning. Your stomach's in your throat. You think you're going to win. You're not sure how you're going to win. And then when it gets to be too much, like, and it did that for a couple years back, and then I kind of stepped away. But that's, and then the other thing is the people. Like, when I walk into a ballpark and you see, like here, you see Fletch, and you see, and everybody knows you. I like that part of it.
There you go. Fantastic portion of Len Kasper's interview with Terry Francona. We'll give you the full interview later on our Sunday Spotlight during the pregame show, which officially begins at noon today, 12:40 first pitch. Jeff Mellor back here on White Sox Weekly. Let's pause 10 seconds for stations to identify themselves.
This is ESPN Chicago, home of the White Sox. WMVP WTBC HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
White Sox looking to sweep the Tigers today at Comerica Park. When we come back, the voice of the Detroit Tigers, Jason Benetti, joined Waddle and Sylvie. Of course, Jason, longtime TV broadcaster for the White Sox as well. He caught up with them on Friday. We'll share that conversation with you, some of that. If you missed it, right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Cap and Jay Hood, tomorrow morning at 6, ESPN Chicago.
A swing and a fly ball deep left. It'll get on out of here. Over the bullpen. Is he locked in now?
Well, mentioned he was seeing the ball good in this at bat, wasn't flinching. And sure enough, there's an indication that that swing was loaded up and ready to go in this at bat.
Two-run blast, his 26th, to make it 8-3 in the sixth. Swing and a high fly ball out in the left center. It is deep. And it is gone. A two-homer game for Vargas. They get one of those runs back. It's 9-5.
Friday night, just another spectacular game for Miguel Vargas as his resurgent season continues after a nice season last year. Miguel Vargas has gone to another level, and he's not in all likelihood going to win, but I think he certainly should be in consideration, and I hope he receives some votes for the MVP. I know Munetaka Murakami's presence might cloud some judgment, but if you've watched the White Sox day in and day out every day, to me, there's no question that Miguel Vargas is the leader of the team, the heartbeat of the team, with his hustle and his ability to give Will Venable flexibility, play third base, play first base, and again, just the guy who really sets the tone in the clubhouse. And then again, in addition to all that leadership that he brings to the team, as a hitter, he is, in my opinion, far and away the most dangerous hitter on the team. Murakami's got better power, but Miguel Vargas's ability to control the strike zone, especially when you'll see him get down 0-2 and consistently fight his way back into counts and draw walks, not just, you know, get back in the count, but draw walks despite being down 0-2 at times. So he's been phenomenal all year. Another couple home runs on Friday nights to help the White Sox to a 9-5 victory on Friday. And then they pick up a 4-3 win yesterday. They claimed the series from the Tigers, and now will go for the sweep today and try and actually extend their season-high 4.5 game lead in the division to 5.5 with a win over the Tigers today. Sean Burke on the mound for the White Sox. Vargas hitting third today, playing third base. The rest of the White Sox lineup looks like this. Sam Antonacci in left, leading off. Murakami at first base, batting second. Vargas third. Benintendi DHing and cleaning up. Braden Montgomery in right field, batting fifth. Colson Montgomery at shortstop, hitting sixth today. Chase Meidroth batting seventh, playing second base. Tristan Peters in center, hitting eighth. And then Drew Romo rounds out the lineup for the White Sox today. Drew Anderson will be on the mound for the Tigers against Sean Burke. Sox fans, join us at the ballpark on Tuesday, August 25th for CHSN Day as the White Sox take on the Rangers at 6:40. 10,000 fans in attendance will receive a late night with Chuck and Ozzy bobblehead presented by CHSN. To purchase tickets and prepaid parking, visit whitesox.com/promos. I mentioned Jason Benetti, the voice of the Tigers, formerly the television broadcast play-by-play man for the White Sox, joined Waddle and Sylvie earlier this week on Friday, actually, and he talked about this series and how big it was.
I would zoom out and say the most surprising thing is how I can no longer say baseball is a marathon, not a sprint. Because the Tigers of the last 3 years have napalmed that phrase. Like, they're way back in 24, they come back and they make the playoffs. They're way ahead in 25, and they lose the lead to Cleveland in the division and still make the playoffs and make the LDS in game 5. And then this year, they went 6-22 in May. The worst any team has ever been under 500 in a season they've won the division is 14. The Tigers were 16 under through 60 games. They would have the all-time record for most games under 500 at any point winning a division. So I think the answer is both. I'm happy for Chris Getz and everybody that they've put together this season like they have because Sox fans deserved it. I am shocked that this series is what it is. And I'm actually really pumped to watch it play out because there's a lot here.
Who have you been most impressed with, Jason, on the White Sox?
I think Chase Meidroff is a nasty at bat. I really like watching him hit. I think he's a really tough out. Sam Antonacci was pretty good when we saw the Sox in the first two series as well. So, like, those two guys are top of my mind just because of the quality of at bat. But Chase Meidroff would be number one for me. I just feel like he is a pain to get out.
You mentioned Getz, Jason, and you obviously got to know him pretty well here as he's been involved in the organization. Are you, like, we were talking about surprises. Are you surprised from going from 41 or so wins 2 years ago to being in this position? I mean, that's a hell of a turnaround in a short time.
I think anybody who tells you that they weren't surprised by how good this team has been is probably, you know, doing at least a little revisionist history on what they thought before the season. There's young talent. We knew that. And, you know, he had assembled some through the trades. But nobody had the White Sox in the division lead halfway through August. I just don't know who thought that. And I really do enjoy teams that defy logic because that's why we play. That's what the Tigers did in 24. That was such a joy to see. They just sprinted back into it out of nowhere. And so, yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody had that.
Not being in the clubhouse on a daily basis, obviously here in Chicago, but from where you're sitting, your perch, Jason, can you tell there's just a different vibe with this team as well?
So the way I would put it is that first series at the rate, I felt like the White Sox were going to come back and win. And the last couple years, even my last year or two there, it felt like something bad was going to happen and the other team was going to win. That's how it felt. So I noticed it in Chicago a couple months ago. Like, it felt like that Vargas home run was going to happen. It felt like they were going to win that series. And that isn't the vibe that I had previously, just anecdotally, and then watching them a couple years separate too. So yes, absolutely. Just the sensibility and that, like, that winning spirit of we can flip this game.
Right.
And then you go, you know, yesterday I turned the game off or I turned the scoreboard off after our day game was done. And I was like, oh, they're down 8-4. And I look and it's 9-8. I like a team, you know, Ricky's boys don't quit, right? Like everybody in Chicago on the South Side loves a team that doesn't give up. And that's kind of where they are.
Hey, how did the you know, the pending trade of Skubal affect the vibe of the Tigers over the course of all of those weeks?
Yeah, you know, a friend of mine from college asked me that same question on the phone yesterday. And I think it's a really good question. And my feeling at a distance, like I haven't talked to anybody specifically about that question, but when you know you have to pile up a bunch of victories to try to keep somebody, right? There's a certain number that the Astros got to add. There's a certain number that, you know, the Diamondbacks got to not sell their bullpen. There's a number that everybody needs to add. When you feel that sort of win total guillotine, there's got to be something to that. This team had been ripping through series and then lost a couple games to Kansas City and then gave up that 7-1 lead to Baltimore before they headed off to the road trip that was going to coincide with the deadline. There had to have been some level of we need to win to make the front office feel something. I would just psychologically wager on that. That's how I feel. It wasn't like, oh, it's a distraction. Like, that's the easy way to say it. I think it was, we've got to get to a win total to push this thing forward. And then that's gone. You alleviate that pressure, and then you play your tails off again. Like, the Tigers' rotation has been phenomenally good over the past couple months. They are homering at a pretty epic clip, and Kevin McGonigal is probably going to be the rookie of the year in the American League, and Dylan Dingler, but for Yordan Alvarez, would be the MVP in the AL, I think. So they've been playing great baseball, and then that last week before the deadline, I was like, what is this?
Was trading Skubal and winning the best case scenario because you got prospects, yet you're still competing? Or is it the worst case scenario that, as you mentioned, the line was so fine that you had to make this decision? You traded him, and man, if you had him every fifth day going now, maybe it would be even better. So which way would you veer?
So Ben Clemens did a story about that very thing on FanGraphs this morning. And he kind of came out in, do you ever see The Good Place? Do you ever watch the NBC show, The Good Place?
Yes.
So there was a medium place where you just went to not be good and not be bad. And this woman named Mindy St. Clair had a house there, and she was the only one who lived there. I feel like the Tigers are in the medium place because you'd rather have Skubal. But also, if you go for it and you don't win a bunch of games and you lose Skubal and you lose Casey Mize and you get nothing for it, this industry works on a bell curve. If everybody else adds properly based on trades and does all what they do, I do think you end up putting yourself behind the eight ball some by not making the deal based on the odds, which again, the Tigers are flouting right now. But would I rather watch Skubal once every 5 days? Absolutely. He was a gem to cover and a gem to watch. I love the guy, and I'm sad to not do his games anymore. And he would have made the Tigers better. Same for Casey Mize. Awesome dude, really quality pitcher. But you kind of have to do what you have to do. It's an artificial deadline. And so I think renegotiating it is going to happen no matter what. But I do think you have to make a decision at some point. And if you always go for it, you're going to be pretty barren at some point and have to pay for it.
A couple random ones for me now, Jason, as we wrap this thing up. Who is your favorite? You just mentioned Mize was great to cover, so was Skubal. Who is your favorite White Sox player in your time on the South Side?
Oh, that is so tough. I mean, I love Chris Sale. I think he's such a competitor and such a winner. I just really like how much of him he is. Lucas Giolito, like getting to do that no-hitter with Lucas and Carlos Rodon the next year too. But Giolito's on the list too. Tim Anderson has got to be on the list. Like that couple years span, he was a magnet for so much stuff, and it was so hard on him. You saw it in the press conference. Mm-hmm. Len sent it to me actually a couple days ago. He was like, "You got to watch this." I love that guy. I think he had it way harder than we all even know. And some of it, he brought it on himself,
sure,
for sure. But some of it was external as well. And I really like that guy. I appreciate him and who he is. And I think, those are a couple top of mind. Sneaky good one, and he never really had a big year other than one home run season. But Matt Davidson was on my list, too. He is a great human being. I like that guy a lot. Yeah, and I know he's had success in Korea, but he's a great dude.
Yeah, I didn't think we'd get that one, but that's good. And then, like, the Tim Anderson thing, like, you're right about that. Like, as high as you can get, and at one time, like, the poster child of what's cool about baseball. And the one thing that Waddle has said, he knows someone, too, who you probably know that he's talked to behind the scenes. Like, there were not everyone on that team from 20 and 21 were hard workers. But the one thing about Tim Anderson, Waddle tells us, is that he was as hard of a worker as anybody.
Oh, he absolutely was. And the mental stuff, like, I still can't get over that he hadn't been to a Major League Baseball game until his debut. Like, he wasn't a baseball guy. In so many ways, not a baseball guy. And so I think he had that weighing on him all the time. And it's not to excuse anything. It's really not. But yeah. But I do think, I mean, when you talk about people who love moments and have fun come out of them, like, PCA has that. I think Javi Baez has that. Like, we still see Javi tagging people in ways that you never expect. And he'll run into one. And he's just a magnet for moments. And I really do think Tim Anderson deserves what he's getting to retire as a White Sox, because that Field of Dreams thing, like, I've had a lot of people in my time with the White Sox remember exactly where they were sitting when he hit that homer. And it meant a lot to a lot of people those years when COVID was happening.
I myself am raising my hand numerous times. I said that Tim Anderson walk-off home run at the Field of Dreams game, for me as a White Sox fan, was one of the best moments, certainly since the 2005 World Series win and that entire playoff run. And for me, it was the biggest moment, at least, you know, prior to this season, since the 05 season. And coincidentally enough, that's a perfect segue from Jason Benetti, who joined Waddle and Sylvie on Friday, to our reminiscence of the 5-year anniversary of the Field of Dreams game, which was this past Wednesday. We revisited it a little bit on the pregame show that day. But now that we've got a little bit more time here on White Sox Weekly, we're going to give you, the Sox fan out there on White Sox Weekly, all of the great highlights from that game when we return on the ESPN Chicago Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
The ESPN Chicago Triple Play, AM, FM, HD, and F.
On an 0-2. Drilled in the air, deep left, and it is in the corn! Jose with a home run! Lined fair into the left field corner. Engel racing to third. Joe McEwing will send him home, and no relay. RBI double Tim Anderson, and it's 3-2. Aloy hits one deep to right field. That baby will go! That is a 3-run homer into the corn. His first pitch to Zavala, hit in the air to right, and it's deep. Judge is back. This one's gone! Sebi Zavala! Two-run homer. It is 7-3. T.A. at the plate. 1-for-4. RBI double and a run in the third inning. And they are set up for two. Whole new Yankee infield here in the ninth inning. Short lead by Sebi. The pitch is hit in the air. Deep to right. That ball is gone. Win the Field of Dreams. 9-8 the final.
Light it up.
Can you believe it?
It was meant to be. First game ever in Iowa.
That's the best game ever played in Iowa.
And just like that, three home runs hit in the ninth inning. A back and forth tug of war, and once a hero, Giancarlo Stanton, it is turned into the hero of the game, is Tim Anderson.
That is one of the craziest ninth innings we have ever witnessed. And nobody has left.
Yeah, this is...
Are we in a movie?
This is without a doubt baseball insanity. It really could not get more exciting than just what we saw between the New York Yankees and your White Sox. For this game to finish in that fashion, and with Tim Anderson, who is one of the spokespeople for your organization, to deliver in this setting, in this venue, it's pretty exciting.
Pure Cinema in Dyersville, Iowa. 5 years ago, earlier this week, when the White Sox walked it off in the inaugural Field of Dreams game against the New York Yankees. Tim Anderson with that magical moment that really did, I think, in a lot of ways, now that we look back and learn, that kind of defined his career. He was the face of the White Sox for that run there, a team that, you know, I think a lot of White Sox fans, at least over the last couple of years, you may have shifted a little bit, but as we get farther and farther removed, I think we'll remember that team fondly because they did win an American League Central Division. They did play in the playoffs. They did have that Field of Dreams game. They did reach the postseason, albeit in a COVID-shortened year the year prior as well. And there was a lot of good times with Tim Anderson and that team. Of course, we heard Jose Abreu hit a homer in that montage. Nice job there by Aiden O'Connor putting that together. Tim Anderson with the walk-off home run. Sebi Zavala, what a game for him as well. Aiden was just mentioning to me how he was a sneaky MVP in that game. But, of course, I think the added significance of the fact that the White Sox did that against the Yankees, too, can't be underestimated. The Yankees were, after that loss that night, they were 63-52. With the win, the White Sox were 68-48 and absolutely flying high. I think people around baseball were already like watching the White Sox closely, but that really did put the stamp of, hey, they arrived and they need to be truly taken seriously as a contender. Of course, Lance Lynn started that game. You know, maybe the one low points from the, or the big thing I remember was the fact that Liam Hendricks, who was nails that year, couldn't hold on to the lead in that game, partially because, you know, it was balls were flying out at a crazy rate because of the heat and the corn fueled rockets that were being provided. And Liam Hendricks actually blew the save there, as you heard DJ and Len talk about that wild ninth inning that took place. And just, you know, reminiscing and thinking about the players coming out of the cornfield for the introduction. Of course, Kevin Costner going on what felt like a 10-minute soliloquy to open the game. It was a fantastic evening. The Major League Baseball and Netflix brought back the game earlier this week on Thursday. It was the third edition of the Field of Dreams game. Phillies taking on the Twins. I watched most of that game and I enjoyed it. It's a great visual. Look, it's undeniable how cool it is. You know, I don't even think you necessarily, I'm somebody who enjoys Field of Dreams, but don't feel like it's a movie where I say it's one of the greatest movies ever made. I'm a baseball fan and I enjoy it, but I don't go back to it religiously. However, I still like what they do, how they built the field there in Dyersville, and just, you know, the old-time baseball-y feel that you get when you watch it is pretty cool. You know, I don't know if it's something that if you start doing it every single year, if it'll lose, you know, some of the novelty of it. But it was cool this year. And I was rooting for the Phillies, obviously, because the Twins are in the mix here in the American League Central. So the Phillies and Kyle Schwarber hitting a couple home runs, was fun to watch them beat the Twins. And it just, you know, more than anything, just had me thinking about the White Sox walking off the Yankees 5 years ago and what a magical moment that was for that team. and Tim Anderson back in 2021. Speaking of Tim Anderson, he did announce that he will retire from Major League Baseball. He met with White Sox media earlier this week. If you missed that, we're going to bring it to you in its entirety, because as Jason Benetti was talking about with Waddle and Sylvie, Tim got extremely emotional. He's somebody who, yeah, for a good five-year stretch, truly was the face of the White Sox, and there was a lot surrounding him, you know, across all of baseball. Remember the Royals, the bat flips, everything that Tim Anderson did. He was the cover athlete for MLB The Show one season. I can't remember if that was 21 or 22, but he was, you know, one of the biggest names in baseball for a couple year stretch there. Tim Anderson was, and he will be retiring as a member of the Chicago White Sox. They're going to welcome him back later this season. I believe it's September 17th, if memory serves. They're going to wear the South Side Connect. Yeah, I got confirmation from the guys behind the glass, Nick and Aiden, that it is September 17th that the White Sox are going to welcome Tim Anderson back to throw out a ceremonial first pitch, and they're going to rock one time only this year, the South Side Connect jerseys. So that'll be pretty cool. So obviously we'll have that one for you here on your home of the White Sox. And I did want to, though, play the Tim Anderson press conference for you, because he did get extremely emotional and talked about some of the difficulties he had to go through as a player, because it wasn't his first love, baseball, that is. You know, he happened to be an extremely gifted athlete who the game somewhat came naturally to. So he talked a lot about what he went through as a player and how he's happy to be returning to, you know, receive some of those flowers on the South Side later this season. Hey, Sox fans, families eat free. Grab your family and head to the ballpark with a family pack starting at $21. Each family member gets one hot dog, drink, chips, and a cookie. For tickets, visit whitesox.com/family. Jeff Meller here on White Sox Weekly. When we come back, we'll let you hear that Tim Anderson meet and greet with the media earlier this week right here on the ESPN Chicago Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
White Sox Weekly Saturdays on ESPN Chicago.
Short lead by Sebi. The pitch is hit in the air. Deep to right. That ball is gone! White Sox win! The Field of Dreams! 9-8 the final!
Light it up!
Can you believe it?
It was meant to be. First game ever in Iowa.
That's the best game ever played in Iowa.
Oh, it was the inaugural game, the Field of Dreams game, 5 years ago earlier this week, as the White Sox walked off the Yankees. Tim Anderson with a great moment in White Sox history. Tim Anderson announced that he will retire after 10 major league seasons, and he will be honored on September 17th. When the White Sox will welcome Tim Anderson back to throw out a ceremonial first pitch, and they will rock those Southside City Connect jerseys for one time only this year on that date. So if you want to head out to the ballpark and celebrate those jerseys and TA September 17th, make your plans now. Tim Anderson did meet with the media to discuss his decision to retire, and this is that conversation with the folks.
You know, just going back over those memories, you know, definitely just one of those games that, you know, we went back and forth, and being able to, you know, walk it off definitely was a great feeling, and, you know, just that moment. That moment's going to be around forever. You know, we still talking about it. You said 5 years from now, we still touching on such a cool moment that happened in baseball.
You know, it was the big talk before the game, but have you seen the movie finally? Have you seen Field of Dreams?
No, I haven't. I still haven't watched the movie.
Hi, Tim. What are you doing these days? What's your life plan now? Are you looking to get back into baseball or with the White Sox in some fashion? What do you have going on?
Well, you know, I'm going to go ahead and retire, but, you know, right now I'm just spending time with the family, enjoying life, and just, you know, just having fun, you know. But I do have my moments where I do miss baseball, but, you know, overall it's, you know, I don't really miss it.
When you think about the Field of Dreams game,
and there's going to be one this week. Do you think they could ever have a moment like you had?
No, I don't think. I don't think that, you know, it couldn't went no better than you know what it did. You know, those moments are you can't forget them, and you definitely can't. You know, you definitely can't remake that game.
Do you have any momentums from there? Any souvenirs that you kept from it?
Yeah, I have the jersey. You know, I kept. You know, I have the helmet as well. So I have the band gloves. I don't have the cleats, but yeah, I definitely have some stuff to you know, from those moments.
Thank you for your time and best to you.
Mm-hmm, thank you.
Sorry, were you saying you are retiring?
Yeah, I'm going to retire, man. You know, just, you know, being open, as you can see, you know that. You know, the game brought a lot of good moments, but also brought a lot of pain, as you can see. You know, it gave me anxiety just even, you know, stepping into the talking about baseball. As you can see, you know, man, I'm sweating now, just, you know. So the game has brought me, honestly, you know, I want to be open as I can, but, you know, the game brought a lot of pain, you know, a lot of great moments, you know, but just throughout, you know, playing, it definitely was a lot of dark moments. I lost a lot of people, and it just got to the point where I really couldn't enjoy it. You know, just being in that setting, it just wasn't the same. Like, even as I sit here and, you know, try to have a open, you know, conversation to be more calm and to be more comfortable and, you know, to talk about, you know, baseball is just, you know, it's not really there no more, you know, but I still love, you know, I still love the game, but it's just, you know, it just brought too much pain to me. And so going back and play is probably not for me right now, as where I'm at right now in life.
How did you kind of, I mean, I guess you kind of talk about kind of coming to that decision, but how did you kind of come to that point? And also, having done that, can you, even in talking about the pain it's caused, can you kind of step back and, like, kind of appreciate what you accomplished? Like, you did a lot. You made the two All-Star teams. You won a batting title. You made the playoffs, stuff like that. Like, are there positive moments, you know, like the Field of Dreams, that you can kind of look back on as part of that?
Yeah. Yeah, they're definitely, you know, great moments. But just overall, you know, the anxiety is just, you know, that's something that I just rather not, you know, step into. You know, it's just I fought to try to get back. I fought for the last 2 or 3 years to, you know, I trained and, you know, I just couldn't get the body to, you know, operate like it used to. So, I mean, I'm not one of those guys that's going to just continue to, you know, try to, you know, get back to somewhere where I just, you know, I couldn't get it back there. But you know, I work. But overall, I'm happy. You know, I'm happy in real life. You know, I'm happy in the real world. I get to enjoy my kids. I get to wake up and you know, do whatever I want to. And that makes me happy. But as far as, you know, thinking about baseball, man, it's a lot. You know what I mean? It's a lot. There's a lot of moments that, you know, a lot of cool moments. But for me, overall, it brought a lot of pain. It brought a lot of anxiety, as you can see as we're talking right now. So it's like, why do that to myself when, you know, I don't have to?
Well, you know, no question, but you know, covering you was a true pleasure, man. And I hope you really, like, you accomplished a lot. I think you should be really proud of your career, man.
Yes, sir. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Tim, good to see you, bud. Piggybacking off of what James was talking about there, first going off that stretch you had of a couple of years of just not just putting the White Sox on the map, but putting yourself on the map. Did you get to enjoy it? Did you enjoy it in the moment? Some of the things that you were talking or that James was just talking about there, the batting titles, the All-Stars.
Yeah.
Did you enjoy it? Do you have more perspective on it now away from the game?
Yeah. I think it's all cool, you know? Honestly, yeah. I do. Yeah. I'm getting emotional right now. Just, you know, because we're talking about something that, you know, I worked my whole life, you know, to get there. I never knew the route. I never knew which turn. I never had no guidance. I kept going. You know, as you know, that was my saying, just keep going. I know I came to the ballpark every day, you know, ready to compete. So just ready to play for that, you know, that logo that's on the front of that jersey. And that's what I did. And, you know, nobody knows, you know, nobody knows what, you know, what I sacrifice and what the body felt every day. What I was leaving at home for my kids to my wife, you know, through some of the decisions I made, you know, I still kept going, you know, I still kept going. And I had my moments to where, you know, it bothered me, but I couldn't show it. And it got to a point to where it started showing, you know, out loud. And I couldn't control it. So, you know, I think it was just one of those moments that, you know, the time is now. You know, the time is now, so I can enjoy life. I'm kind of happier, you know, waking up and, you know, being able to be around my kids. And, you know, really living a real life because, you know, life is bigger than, you know, trying to make people happy with a bat and a ball, you know what I mean? So now that I get to step out outside of that and see what, you know, what life is, you know, I'm really enjoying it. And yeah, I'm definitely happy for my moments, but, you know, man, it's just, you know, I get sad, you know, talking about it because that's, you know, this is the first team that gave me my opportunity. It took the chance on me that, you know, I didn't have a crazy resume. I didn't play, you know, all the crazy little camps and stuff. So they gave me a shot and they stuck by my side. So I think it's only right that I get to come back and, you know, retire White Sox for sure.
You, you know, a lot of guys, I was surprised to see the email yesterday had said that we were going to meet with you. And I'm obviously glad that we're doing this, but, you know, a lot of guys are struggling that are playing the game, that are not playing the game, that in your situation that have stepped away from the game. Why did you want to talk about this? And do you feel like you can be a voice or a help for some other players who might be, you know, in a similar situation?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, for me to want to do it, you know, like this, they sent the invitation for me to, you know, come out and, you know, throw out the first pitch as well. So I think it was only right that, you know, I go back to where it started. But yeah, man, just, they took a shot and just me coming in, just being committed and doing everything the right way. You know, I never look for my flowers, you know what I'm saying? So I think it's right that I could at least get a little love, you know what I mean? Just through over the course of my career. I mean, we did some good stuff, you know what I mean? We had some good moments. So I think it's only right that I do come, you know, I want to be a White Sox. And so I'm glad I was a White Sox player. And I'm glad I get to, you know, get on the other side and still have a team that I could cheer for and really, you know, have some history there as well.
Well, I'm with James, man. You're a true pleasure to cover. I know we got to do a lot of things off the field too. So I'm glad that you're back. So congratulations, man. You had a hell of a run.
I appreciate it.
You know, just speaking about the Field of Dreams game, just the trip around the bases when you hit the home run, mm-hmm. What do you remember about that? And just getting joining on your teammates at home plate during that moment there.
Just as I round second, I see the team, you know, everybody just going crazy. I look up in the stands, everybody's just going crazy and you hear the fireworks. I mean, just a moment of happiness, you know, we're really happy in that moment. That moment made everybody happy. I think everybody in the baseball world was happy, whether it don't matter which team you was really going for. Well, I mean, besides if you was a Yankee, but, you know, just being in that moment, just definitely, you know, it struck the baseball community. And, you know, just being happy, I think the ultimate goal is just to be happy. And that was really a happy moment.
And a moment like that, I mean, that's something that you're going to obviously take with you for the rest of your mm-hmm. life. And that's something that you remember, you know, not only for in that moment, but also when you when you think back of that moment, is that one of those moments that's like, hey, I made an impact on the game itself?
Yeah, definitely huge moment, a moment to remember. And you can easily ask somebody, do they remember that? And they'll say, yeah. So it's definitely one of those moments for sure.
I was saying you did so much with the community here too, and yep. In kind of a short amount of time. Is that something you're going to keep, you know, maybe revisit?
Yeah, that's definitely something that I want to continue to keep going. You know, working into the community now that I can get back to those things and, you know, kind of get back to seeing that light. You know what I mean?
Hey, Tim, I will echo the other four people and say what a great pleasure it was to cover you over the years and continuing on. You know, Can you explain to those of us who don't have it, what is fame like to deal with when it's kind of thrust upon you like that? You know, I mean, like you said, you didn't come as a highly, highly touted prospect. You weren't a college superstar where it was kind of ordained that you were going to be this. What is it like dealing with that from the good and the bad, you know, when things kind of go great to kind of go south a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, it's good. Like I said, it's good and bad. But you never know what you expect. I mean, I'm from Alabama. It's a small community. I never had to deal with that. I never did the camps or, you know, anything, but to get in it and, you know, to live it, you kind of understand it as you go. And you kind of grow with it. It depends on, you know, the people that you come across. And I was able to connect with some of the right people and connect with some good people, but I also connected with some bad people as well. So, that's something that you don't know, but, you know, and just trying to find mentors along the way. But, it definitely, you know, it's definitely different. You find out who with you, find out who against you. So, I mean, we can go on and talk about, you know, the good and the bad, but it definitely comes with a lot. It's a lot.
Who were a couple of those mentors? I think I kind of know, but who were the mentors you had kind of with the White Sox specifically?
Yeah, I had Bo Jackson. I had some of Frank Thomas and, you know, I had Darryl Boston. Really, you know, all the guys throughout. Really, the older guys that played, some of the old timers that played, you know, I really – you know, rub shoulders with them. Tony La Russa had a good connection with them. So really all the guys that came through, I was able to build, you know, even with Jerry, you know, I was able to have, I took some time and, you know, we spent some time in his office and just talk about things, whether it was baseball, whether it was just real life. So I kind of got a chance to be a sponge to really, you know, everybody that came through.
And what are you doing business-wise right now? I know you said you're spending a lot of quality time with your wife and kids and everything, but what about business-wise?
So I had a food truck. I have, you know, a clothing line that I'm definitely working on. And I'm helping my wife. So really a lot of cool things and, you know, helping my kids. My kids are, you know, they're doing cheer now. So really just, I'm all over the place, just really enjoying life, you know, but I think the biggest goal is like, you know, I'm really, you know, I get to wake up every day and be happy. I ain't got to wake up and hit no curveball. We're about a 100-mile-per-hour fastball coming at me to be able to provide for my family. So just being able to, you know, get to this point and be happy, you know. Overall, I'm just, you know, happy.
Tim Anderson, earlier this week, as he met with the media, announcing his retirement from Major League Baseball after 10 years in the big league. 2016 is when T.A. made his debut for the White Sox, of course. He won the batting title in 2019 with a .335 batting average. He actually received some MVP votes back in 2020 when he finished seventh for the White Sox that season. Remember when they made the playoffs in the COVID-shortened year? And, of course, in 2021, when he had that epic walk-off in the Field of Dreams game, he had probably his best complete season when he accumulated a 4.5 wins above replacement that year. Of course, was named an all-star for the first time in his career, and really was for a brief moment in time kind of the face of baseball. So sad to see TA hang him up, but of course cool to hear him reminisce about some of those good times. And he'll have his moment again later this season on September 17th at Wrigley Field when he throws out that ceremonial first pitch and the White Sox rock the Southside City Connect jerseys that night. Hey, Sox fans, enter the Ultimate Fan Sweepstakes for your chance to win the Chicago Sports Ticket Package. The winner will receive two tickets to a regular season home game for the White Sox, a Chicago Bulls, and Chicago Fire. Enjoy a full season of Chicago sports. To enter, visit whitesox.com/sweepstakes. When we come back, we'll get you set as we wrap up this edition of White Sox Weekly. We'll do that when we come back right here on the ESPN Chicago Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Sox games, all of them, on the ESPN Chicago app.
You think you'll get a kick out of seeing everybody wearing a Pope hat tonight?
I think that would be pretty cool. Yeah, very excited about Pope night. And obviously a lot of people are excited. Sounds like there's going to be a lot of people here. Anytime we can celebrate the Pope and his fandom of the White Sox is something that we'll lean into. Hopefully, yeah, it gives us some good favor for us tonight.
The result did not go the way the White Sox were hoping, but the giveaway was amongst the best I've ever seen at a Major League ballpark. Pope Hat giveaway, 40,000, give or take, and it was pretty cool. Fans got a huge kick out of that. Hey, speaking of the ballpark, head to the ballpark Saturday, August 22nd for Puerto Rican Heritage Night, presented by Discover Puerto Rico, as the White Sox take on the Mets at 6:40. 10,000 fans in attendance receive a White Sox wooden domino set. To purchase tickets and prepaid parking, visit whitesox.com/promos. I'm Jeff Meller. That's going to wrap up this edition of White Sox Weekly. Thanks to Aiden O'Connor and Nick Palazzolo for producing. Pre-game coverage comes your way next at the top of the hour, noon, White Sox and Tigers series finale right here on ESPN 1000.